This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I am your host, Steve Olscher, along with the lovely round eye Rob Murray-Villet, Rich Ote, and White Way Kelly Bulger hanging around somewhere around their own respective little places. And we got a very interesting show here. God bless you, Rich. Ote, right. Man.
There wasn't a sneeze switch.
No switch. There's a cough. I know, right? Switch. In a radio station, there's a cough switch, but there's no sneeze switch. There we go. And as a matter
it's
of fact,
another invention.
If anybody can help us build a multi-million-dollar company, I think it's our guest today, which would be Mr. Jay Baer himself. Jay, are you there with us, my man?
I am here on Reinvention Radio.
Hey, what's up, buddy? Hey, man, thanks so much for joining us. And as a creator of five multi-million-dollar companies, we just gave you your six, which would be a because you do a lot of radio, you do a lot of media, and I'm sure you've seen the cough switch. We need this the sneeze switch. So that's your next big thing. What do you think? Yes? No?
I think that and also the Girl Scout cookies thing.
Right. You love the Girl Scout cookies thing, right? And actually on the break, Rich was saying, because I don't know if you caught the first part of it, but we were talking about how the feds basically stepped in and said, hey, you know, we still don't care what the states are doing. We're going to consider it to be a class one substance, and it's still illegal on the federal level, so do whatever you're going to do. But we just obviously said, hey, you know, let's tie the two together, Girl Scout cookies and passing marijuana legislation. And I think that's I think that's what J. Conrad Levinson Stephen Covey originally referred to as a win-win right there.
That's synergy. The Girl Scouts even make more money.
Girl Scouts even make more money. All right. So, Jay, for those who don't know you, you are involved with a lot of very, very interesting things. And I would just totally and completely probably butcher what it is that you want people to know about you. So why don't you give us sort of the Jay Baer version of who you are and what you're up to?
I'll do my best. Thanks very much. So I run a company called Convince and Convert, which does social media, content marketing, customer service, strategic counsel for some of the most interesting brands in the world. We work with United Nations, 3M, Allstate, Adidas, Cisco, Oracle, a bunch of really cool organizations. I have written five best-selling books, spend most of my time traveling around the world giving speeches about marketing and customer service. My team runs six weekly podcasts, and I'm also a tequila collector and a certified barbecue judge.
Nice. Okay.
Wow.
So quickly, we're going to go in the direction of tequila. We have to. Because
I was going to say, I want to come over to my house.
Right. You know where I'm going with this. So, Jay, just in case you didn't know, I own liquor.com. And if you haven't been on liquor.com recently, please check it out. And you can – no, I'm just not going to pitch it that much. All right. But let's do this, man. Tequila. Let's talk it. All right. So tequila connoisseur, I want to know, what are you drinking right now?
So, you know,
and I don't mean literally right now, but I mean like in general, like after 5 o'clock.
If I've got to pick one that I'm just going to go to over and over, it's the Casa Dragones, which to me tastes like angel tears. I mean, it is the most delicious and refined tequila out there. It's fantastic. Somebody gave me a bottle as a gift, which is nice because it's really expensive. And so I love that one. I typically, day-to-day, though, prefer a Reposado. So I like the Milagro single-barrel Reposado. I drink a fair bit of that.
Yeah, nice. Mm. All right. And I don't know if you guys know this or not, because I don't think we've talked about this before, but I have been told that that Angel Tears, that I don't know if you knew that, but that was actually my nickname in high school. I was known
as that is categorically untrue.
Angel Tears Olscher. That was
it's a great band name too. Let's work on that.
Angel Tears, exactly. All right. So you have been doing a lot of really interesting things over the years, and not the least of which, of course, is you got on the social media, I don't want to say bandwagon, but you embrace social media, you know, pretty early on. When was the first time? Tell me about the first time you were online. What year was it, and what do you remember about your first online experience?
Okay, this is a crazy story, right? So before I got online, I started in politics. I was a political campaign manager as a young man, then worked in corporate marketing, then worked for a very brief time as a spokesman for the Arizona Department of Juvenile Corrections. And so my job was essentially to give tours of Arizona's juvenile prison system, which is not a great job. And so I was having beers with some friends of mine from college, and I said, you know, I will do just about anything to not give another tour of this prison. And they said, well, as luck would have it, we have started the very first internet company in Arizona, and it's getting a little bit bigger, and we don't know anything about marketing, so how about you do that? And I said, fine. So I walked in the next day and quit, and found myself as the vice president of marketing for an internet company, having never been on the internet, but this was 1993.
Wow.
So we were selling dial-up internet access, right? Floppy disk, loud modem, and the whole deal. So I started then. That was pre-Yahoo, pre-browser, pre-everything.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it ever since. I've only made two good decisions in my life. Mm. One was to convince my wife to marry me, and it took no small amount of convincing. And second was to get involved in the internet really early and have the good sense to never get uninvolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually do share that. I launched on, and you'll appreciate this, I launched on CompuServe's Electronic Mall. In 1993. And I remember it's so funny because you're in the barbecue space as well. Do you know Craig Goldwyn?
I do not know Craig Goldwyn.
Okay, so he's kind of that barbecue aficionado kind of guy. Anyway, Craig was running the food and drink. You guys are rolling your eyes already. So Craig Goldwyn was running the food and drink section of AOL. And, of course, with Liquor.com, we were, you know, doing our stuff with CompuServe. I remember quite specifically telling him, you know, Craig, I think you picked the wrong horse, man. AOL is not going to survive that. You know, you really should think about coming over to CompuServe. And so, you know, Jay, I think this will give you a little bit of perspective in terms of don't come to me for advice. So I think that's the opposite. Or do the opposite of what I do. I think that's the moral of the story there.
Exactly.
So, all right. So you obviously then started online very, very early on. What got you into this whole world then of social media? What was that first? Because social media, for all intents and purposes, I mean, it's kind of been dancing around in various iterations for a number of years. But when was the first time that you actually realized the virality and you realized the power of social media?
It wasn't really a detonation event, but it was really a natural progression because I did a lot of work in email and then search and paid search and banner ads and all the different ways that you can communicate online. And so when I started this company, Convince & Convert, in 2008, I'd sold a previous agency and started this firm, and it was just me for a while, and I was writing a blog. I'd never had a blog before, so I started writing a blog, as one did in 2008, and still people do, and I do. And so I started writing a blog, and I wrote four or five blog posts a week, and I discovered that every time I wrote a blog post about email or conversion rate optimization or, you know, headlines or whatever, it did fine. But then every time I wrote a blog post about social media, everybody read it. And I thought, well, gee, there's enough testing. And so we decided to really focus on social media and did it at the right time and have now made a career out of helping people figure out how to use social media effectively over the last 8 or 10 years. And what's great about social media in particular is that you have massive amounts of job security because the rules change, the platforms change, the numbers change about every 5 minutes. You know, every day Facebook has a new announcement that sends shockwaves through the industry, and so I've got to have different advice, and my clients have to have different advice, and so it is never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So my question then is, you got involved with, obviously, this whole world of customer service and giving people the opportunity to use technology as an unfair customer service advantage. So, I mean, my question to you is, how do people use technology as an unfair marketing customer service advantage?
Well, and so I'm a marketer by trade. But the work that we do for clients at Convince & Convert has led us to this place where there's this huge conversion and confluence and combination between marketing and customer service. A lot of our clients were saying, well, we're marketers, but how should we handle customer service on Facebook, Twitter, and beyond? And the customer service people said, well, how do we handle this with marketing? And a lot of confusion there. And so I did a bunch of research and wrote a book called Hug Your Haters, all about customer service disruption. And what I discovered and put a lot of math around is that how customers interact with companies has changed a ton in the last few years. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that long ago that from a customer service context, all you really had to worry about was in-person, phone, and email. You could cover those three things, in-person, phone, and email. You pretty much had it licked. Now it's in-person, phone, email, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Yelp, TripAdvisor, or whatever ratings and review sites matter in your industry, discussion boards and forums, Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, WeChat, Line, Kick, you know, a bunch of Snapchat, a bunch of other places. And so most businesses, in fact, the preponderance of businesses, are not ready for that disruption. They're using a 1995 playbook to solve 2016 customer service problems, and they can now use technology, in fact, also some internal process changes to harness the power of customer service. Most people aren't, which is why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very, very helpful. And so, you know, reality is that most businesses, especially the old school kind of businesses, they've been kind of slow to embrace technology as the platform in which to engage with their customers. Why do you think some of the dinosaurs, which we can lovingly call them, but why do you think they've been so slow to embrace the way that we, and when I say we, it's sort of the euphemistic we here, but the people who are involved in technology, why do you think they've been so slow to embrace it?
Well, because you don't have the same kind of margin for error. Let me put it into a customer service context, since that's what I was mentioning a second ago. For almost the entirety of human existence, customer service has been primarily a private function, right? If you call, if you email, if you talk to somebody face-to-face, your interaction with that company is in private. Now, increasingly, interactions with companies are in public, mm-hmm. on Facebook, on Twitter, on Yelp, on TripAdvisor, et cetera, et cetera. And that changes both the economic stakes, but also makes it much riskier for businesses. Because if they do it wrong or they don't do it at all, then everybody can see that. And that makes it really hard for them to do it well. And so what happens as a practical matter is a lot of businesses say, you know what, it's too hard, I'm just not going to do it. I mean, the research that I conducted showed that one-third of all customer complaints are never answered. Never. Wow.
Jeez.
And almost all of those are in social media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Well,
where everybody can see the fact that you didn't answer.
Wow. Yeah,
oh, wow.
I know. Which makes it even worse. All right, let's do this. We're going to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio. We got Jay Baer on the line, and we're talking about all sorts of interesting things, not the least of which, of course, is how to use technology as an unfair marketing customer service advantage. Jay Baer, JayBaer. com is the best place to find out more information about him, as well as convinceandconvert.com. We'll be back with Jay Baer here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio, as we are talking with Mr. Jay Baer himself, author of a number of really, really good books. I have to say, Jay, I think my favorite is Utility. That's a hell of a book, man. You got to be pretty proud of that work, no?
Yeah, thanks very much. Utility has really exceeded my expectations in terms of becoming part of the kind of marketing world. You know, people refer to it in meetings and bake it into their strategies and things like that. It's kind of become a thing that has taken on a life of its own, and that's kind of what you want to do as an author.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like a staple. You know, I had an opportunity to spend some time with J. Conrad Levinson before he died, and, you know, guerrilla marketing. I mean, you just talk about books that you just have to read if you're in the business world. And I got to tell you, if you haven't read Utility, that's a mistake. You got to read that book. It's a really, really good book. And then, of course, Jay has other books as well. Now, Rich, we were talking just over the break here a little bit about customer service and how things have kind of come to a point now where, like, you know, you didn't want to air your dirty laundry before. I mean, like, you didn't want to look bad. You didn't want to admit things. You just kind of wanted to bury that shit under the rug and, like, not even deal with it. And now it's like, and Jay obviously can speak to this, but you had a point about just kind of airing all of that out and how it actually makes you look better in the minds of your customers. What were you saying, Rich?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the airlines, Jay, and it seems like just since so much goes wrong in the airlines, right, customer service is a great one to discuss there, and it seems like the airlines that handle their customer service online, even if there's problems, they seem to do nothing but go up, and which is good for an airline, and and the ones that try to direct you to an 800 number or solve it offline are seeming to have some big problems. It's good to see, like, you're jumping in where everyone else is trying to run out.
Well, and you know,
oh, absolutely.
Hey, sorry, Jay.
In fact, even recently with the Southwest Airlines snafu from a few weeks ago, I wrote a big blog post about that and did a lot of press about it. They actually did a a pretty great job in terms of how they handled it online. Offline, I would say not so great. A lot of people had long lines, and people at the airports were not as perhaps empathetic as they could be. But online, I thought they did a great job. They used Facebook Live video from time to time on their Facebook page and just went on there, like literally in their war room in the company, and said, okay, yeah, this is all screwed up, and we're super sorry, and here's what we're doing to work on it. And they had the COO on the video and, you know, just like, okay, this is straight from the horse's mouth. Here's what's going on. And that would have been unthinkable not too long ago. So that level of humanity and transparency goes a long way.
Well, and also to bring the human element into the current moment of something going south, Delta Airlines, I guess they were stranded on the tarmac somewhere, and so they ordered pizza for all the passengers, and all the passengers started taking photos and tweeting and all that, so that a real incident went viral on social media.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
Well, what I love about that is it's a perfect example of something I talk about in the book, which is that customer service done well is the new marketing. Mm-hmm. If you can exceed customers' expectations, even in a service environment where they're unhappy or frustrated, you can turn them from detractors into advocates, and you can actually use that flip to cause other people to become customers who maybe wouldn't have thought of you at all. And that is a really effective way to run your business. It's disheartening that most people don't run their business that way, but hopefully we're working on it.
I've even seen stats that have shown that people are more loyal customers after they have a problem that was solved not having a problem at all.
Absolutely. We cite that in the book. It's actually like a weird Stockholm syndrome kind of thing, right? That if you solve their problem, they're more loyal than if they never had a problem. It's sort of like we were in this together. We walked through fire together, and we solved it, which makes me think, as sort of a Machiavellian business person, like, how can we create a problem for everybody that we know we can solve that psychological... I don't recommend that, but it makes you wonder, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. And I guess part of my question is, I mean, let's be honest here. Like, some of this is just damn common sense. It's like, why on earth wouldn't these companies... I mean, not that I'm trying to put you out of a job here, Jay, but I mean, let's be real, man. Like, why do people need you? You know what I'm saying? It's like, why do these companies need what you do? You would think that some of this stuff would just be common sense.
No one likes confrontation. No one likes to get yelled at. No one wants to hear someone else complain about something that you're doing or offering to them.
Yeah.
And so they would rather just say, okay, it will go away if I just ignore them.
Because it's like the power of
they're afraid.
And with the way that we communicate now and the way that social media is so prevalent, I mean, one post of a negative nature, and maybe you have stats around this, Jay, but I think there was a study that I had seen at some point that basically a negative post is shared 10x than a positive post. What's the reality around that? Do you know?
Yeah, that's about it. That's pretty much dead on, exactly.
Yeah, and so you would think, I mean, just from a common sense standpoint, if somebody's out there, and it's so darn easy, all you got to do is just put up an alert. So, like, if somebody is talking about, you know, Jay, you're going to get that alert, you know what I mean? So you're going to know that they're talking about you. If somebody uses your symbol, Jay, I mean, you're going to see that. So at what point do you ignore it, and at what point do you address it?
You should address it every time. You know, the advice in the book is to answer every customer in every channel every time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most businesses don't do that. They don't put those kind of resources against it because they're too interested in customer acquisition and getting new customers, and they spend comparatively less time, energy, and money on keeping the customers they've already earned. Like, we all know, everybody knows in business that it makes more sense to try and keep your customers, to reduce churn and worry about customer retention, but we don't actually run businesses by that principle. In fact, if you look at the stats globally, about $500 to $600 billion a year are spent on marketing. Mm-hmm. And about $9 billion are spent on customer service.
Well,
that tells you all you need to know about people's actual priorities. And what happens because of that is there's an amazing research project that Bain put together which said that 80% of companies say that they deliver exceptional customer service. 8% of their customers agree.
Oh, boy.
So you're right. You're right. Businesses probably think they don't need my advice and they don't need this book, but they absolutely do because they're not nearly as good at this as they think they are.
Right. Rich, what were you going to say? You're rolling out of your chair there.
I was just laughing, thinking a thought to myself. Like, oh, I've never seen anybody answer a customer service problem and then land them on a landing page where they can also get an email and gain new customers later down that page. You know, obviously not in the beginning, but, you know, maybe talking about the company or because it sounds as if, reading between the lines with Jay, though, that being good at customer service is a way to acquire customers.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Word
because
of mouth.
Customers tell their friends. Like, yeah. Everybody who has an amazing customer service, like your pizza story is perfect, right? Every single one of those people is going to not only tell their friends face-to-face, but it's probably going to post it in social media, as you saw. Mm-hmm. So when you do something that totally exceeds customer expectations, word of mouth becomes involuntary. You no longer have a choice. You are compelled to talk about it. And that then builds the brand, changes how people perceive the brand, increases consideration, trial, purchase intent, all those kind of things. And so customer service can be marketing, but the only reason that works today is because now customer service is a spectator sport. That dynamic of customer service creating marketing opportunities didn't used to exist because customer service was always in private, as we talked about in the previous segment, phone, email, face-to-face. In that environment, that doesn't get triggered. But in a social-enabled environment, it does get triggered, and it's a huge opportunity that most businesses are totally taking a nap on.
Yeah, and then let me give you an opportunity here to do something, because let's just say hypothetically I run a huge conference and I've got 10,000 people coming to this conference. I've got a $50,000 speaker budget, and I'm thinking, look, I've got Peter Shankman who talks about this customer service stuff, and I got Jay Baer who talks about this customer service stuff and stuff. All right, so why do I hire Jay Baer that and not Peter Shankman? I mean, I know the answer, but I'm just curious, like, why? What does Jay Baer say to that? Just curious.
I know Peter well. He and I are good friends. Love his book. I've cited it a couple times in my book. I would say two things. One, I actually run a consulting company that does this every day. So I actually know how this works in the real world. And two, we actually come at it from a slightly different perspective. So Pete's book is called Zombie Loyalists, which is about shock and awe, right? Mm-hmm. Which is about that sort of the pizza story that we talked about before. And that totally works. It's a good idea. My book and my philosophy is more about, hey, yeah, let's do that if you can, but the bigger problem is that you're not answering one-third of your customer complaints. The subtitle of my book, I think, is more illustrative in this comparison, which is how to embrace complaints and keep your customers. What I will tell you is that the people who complain about your company, the haters, if you will, are the most important customers you have, yet we routinely treat them like our least important customers. Mm-hmm. That's the thing you have to fix, and that's really the core of my advice. And so that's where I don't think Pete would disagree. It's just that he talks about sort of taking customers and making them love you more, and I talk about taking people who hate you and making them love you.
And to that end, at what point, and I mean, because let's be honest here, I mean, especially when people get the, I call them keyboard muscles. You know how, like, when you drink too much, you get beer muscles and, like, you think you can beat up the world? I call them keyboard muscles because, like, you get those finger muscles. I mean, like, you hide behind the keyboard and you can say whatever it is that you want to say, and no one's the wiser until, of course, they trace your IP address and then you go to jail for some of that stuff. But, reality is, at some point, don't you have to cut the rope, man? I mean, don't you just have to say, look, there is nothing that I'm going to be able to do to make this person happy? At what point do you stop engaging the hater?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a rope, and I actually talk about that in the book. It's called Jay Baer's Rule of Reply Only Twice. And that rule says that you never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, reply to a customer more than twice in public, because nothing good comes of it. It's either a recipe for getting caught in a negative tit-for-tat spiral, or it's just a waste of time. So if somebody says, oh, I didn't like this, this is terrible, you answer back, oh, we're sorry that we disappointed you, tell me more about what happened. And they answer a second time, and they say, I don't want to talk to you about it. You guys are just the worst. Mm-hmm. And you answer a second time, and you say, well, we must have really disappointed you. We're sorry about that. Maybe we should talk about this in a more comprehensive or nuanced fashion. We'd be delighted if you could call us or email us at this number. If they come back a third time and say, look, I don't want to call you, I don't want to email you, you guys are just the worst, at that point, instead of you answering a third time, you just walk away. Mm-hmm. Because you've given that person two chances. You've given them an alternate contact mechanism. You have demonstrated that you care. You've demonstrated that you'll hug your haters. You've shown all the spectators who are looking on Facebook, Twitter, Yelp, what have you, that you do care. That person has shown that they do not actually want to be helped. They just want to complain. And at that point, just let them do it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, really great, great, great sage advice there from Jay Baer. Talking to Jay Baer, convincingconvert.com, jaybaer.com. I actually want to talk about how we can, he's got this method about dimensionalizing fear and uncertainty. Lots of interesting stuff to talk about with Jay Baer here on Reinvention Radio. More with Mary Goulet, Retortelli, and Steve Ulscher right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Reinvention Radio. Steve Olscher, Mary Gouley, Richard Tay in the house, talking to Jay Baer. And that's Jay Baer, B-A-E-R.com, jaybaer.com, and of course, convinceandconvert.com as well. Now, Jay, before the break, what we wanted to talk a little bit about here is you've got this method, and clearly you're a much smarter person than I, because around four syllables or so, I my head kind of explodes. But you've got this thing here that I think, I didn't even measure it out, but it's way more than four syllables. But you've got this thing for, it's a method really for dimensionalizing fear and uncertainty. And I just want to make sure that we get that covered, because I know you've got a really, really interesting perspective around that. So give us some of your thoughts. What's the overview around that?
Well, one of the challenges with how we think about business today is especially in the entrepreneurial world, is that we tend to not take action because we're scared. And this happened to me. So for a long time, before I started my own entrepreneurial journey, I wanted to start my own thing. I wanted to have my own agency and my own professional services company and all that, and always wanted to do it and never did it because I was scared. And I had a wife and a young daughter, and I was like, nah, you know, what if it doesn't go well? And I just didn't take the plunge, right? I had a good job, and mm-hmm. You just don't do it. And that fear kind of prevents you from doing something that you really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And about that same time, my best friend, who also married my wife's sister, so my best friend became my brother-in-law, which I really recommend. If you can socially engineer that, it's awesome.
That's
so funny. I was 30. He was 30. We were all 30. And he was diagnosed with brain cancer.
Mm.
And he told me. And I walked in the next day, and I quit. And I said, you know, this has caused me to realize, like, what am I actually scared of? Like, what's really the worst thing that can happen here? If I start my own company, and if it doesn't go well, I might lose some money, but I'll just go get a job as somebody else's internet guy
sure,
at the time.
Sure.
Like, what's really going to happen here? I'm not going to lose my health. I'm not going to lose my life, as unfortunately eventually happened to him. And so that was the impetus that I needed to kind of propel me, and I've never worked for anybody a day since. And so the advice that I give a lot of people, and I do a lot of angel investing and work with a lot of young entrepreneurs, is anytime you're stuck, anytime you're racked with indecision and you're scared, and you're like, I think this is the right thing, but I'm scared, take a piece of paper and a pen, don't even use a keyboard, sit down and literally write out exactly what you're scared of. And when you do that, when you dimensionalize your fear, when you put shape to your fears, you realize in most cases, like, wait a second, that's not actually that scary. What usually causes us to not act in a certain way because of fear is that the fear itself is amorphous and ill-defined, mm-hmm. and so you're scared of being scared more than you are scared of the thing. When you write it down, it takes that all away.
Yeah. No, that's really, really, really sage advice. And let's go back for a second here, because you talk about angel investing, and you've actually built a number of companies yourself. What's the biggest exit that you've had personally from a company that you've built, and what was that company?
A company that I invested in did pretty well. A company that I built with a professional services firm that I sold to a larger ad agency is a company called Mighty Interactive, which was sort of a prototype of the firm that I run now, and you know, we sold that for a few million dollars, which allows me to not worry day to day about, you know, did we invoice this client.
Mm-hmm. That's a good worry not to have. So you do some VC stuff, you do some angel investing and whatnot. What's the best way to put this? What's got you the most excited right now? Like, what comes across your desk that you're like, damn, that is really, really good? What are you seeing right now that's got you excited?
There's two that I'm involved in right now that I'm really passionate about. I mean, I'm lucky to be in a bunch of cool companies that people who are in the social media space might know. Buffer is one that I'm involved in. That's a really successful small company. But there's two that I'm in that I really love. One just got their EPA approval last week, and it's a big milestone. It's a company called SenesTech that I've been involved in for almost a decade. But it's a bio company. It takes a long time for those things to happen. And so what SenesTech does is really quite remarkable. They create species-specific bait that then sterilizes nuisance mammals. So their current project is they have a special rat bait that rats just can't get enough of, and when the rats eat it, the female rats become sterile. So you don't need rat poison, which has lots of problems, of course. Mm-hmm. No rat poison, just need this rat food, which sterilizes the females and eventually controls the population. Have a huge pilot program with the New York City Transit Authority controlling rats inside New York subways, and that's now been commercialized and going to be available in a much wider area, which is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting company to see, you know, technology being used to solve those kind of problems.
Is it specific to that animal's DNA? If another animal eats that, it doesn't go.
That's the natural question, right? Like, wait a second. What if a hobo eats that? I totally get it. Yes, it is species specific, and of course, tested a million ways, which is why it took a long time to get approved.
Which is interesting because it speaks to the power of. Let's be honest, that's about as offline of an investment as you could possibly make.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a physical, tangible, offline product that is as far removed from this whole online world as you could possibly get. So do you find that it's important to balance? I mean, for those that are looking to invest or for those that are thinking about different businesses or have that entrepreneurial mindset, do you find that a mix, almost like a mutual fund? I mean, do you find that a mix of investments works best overall and works best for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, no question. It's a basket of opportunities. I think there's lots of markets that can be disrupted. And if you find something that disrupts the market, it's probably worthy of investment if you believe in the team, because ultimately it's a people business at the startup size. I will say, though, that the majority of my investments are in my own industry.
Sure.
One of the rules that we have is, look, if my company adopts a piece of software, I'm involved in a lot of SaaS companies, as you might suspect. If my company starts to use it day to day, or like, yeah, we love this, well, then there's probably something there.
Mm-hmm.
And so a number of the software tools that we use day to day at Convince and Convert, we have an investment piece of.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I've got a tech idea I want to run by you. So I'm gonna hit you up after the show. You open for that?
No problem.
Yeah. All right. Sweet, man. Sounds really good. Now, most importantly, you're a barbecue aficionado, right?
Yeah.
All right. So talk to me. So what's the barbecue staple? Like, what's the one dish? Like, if you had to, like, if you couldn't have anything else, but you could only have that one barbecue dish, which one would it be?
Well, I'm kind of a classicist because I'm actually a trained judge, and I went to barbecue school and all that. And so I feel like if you really want to measure a barbecue restaurant or a backyard barbecue, I kind of feel like if you go pork ribs, right, if you go spare ribs, that is really probably the truest test because the meat is pretty consistent, you know, across the board, and you can really tell somebody's style and their technique just by lining up a bunch of ribs.
Yeah. So I gotta agree. I mean, it's gotta be the ribs or if I'm doing it, I gotta tell you, a good brisket. I'm a Jew, so I mean, you know, kind of going back to my roots.
And I love brisket. I love Texas style barbecue. Big
right.
fan, and brisket's the best. And I love cooking brisket too, but man, it is a cruel mistress as a barbecuer.
Right.
There's nothing more inconsistent than brisket, and you can know what you're doing and have the right equipment. But brisket itself, when you go buy a brisket, brisket is the most inconsistent cut of meat that you can barbecue with. So sometimes you do everything right, and it turns out terrible, and sometimes you kind of screw it up for the formula, and it turns out great, and man, it is confusing.
Yeah, we got about 40 seconds before we got to get off here, but let me ask you this. What's got you most excited for the rest of this year and for the immediate future?
I'm really fired up about live video and where live video is going, both in a marketing context and a customer service context. You see businesses, you know, small, medium, and large, using live video to give customers a sense of what's happening right now, and there's tons of opportunities, and it's early days. So if you haven't gotten involved yet, do it now.
And are we talking about Blab? Are we talking about Facebook? Which platform are you just absolutely saying this is the one you got to pick?
I mean, I feel like Facebook Live is probably the leader in the clubhouse just because of the reach inherent in the platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Cool. Really, really good stuff. So, Jay Baer, really do appreciate you coming on. That's J-A-Y-B-A-E-R, so jaybaer.com. Again, if you haven't picked up Utility, I mean, Jay's got a number of different books, and if you haven't picked up Utility, it's certainly you want to start there. I mean, it's a great book. And, Rich, have you read that one, by the way?
No, I read Hug Your Haters, though.
You read that? Okay, awesome. And so
I'm getting the Utility for Real Estate Agents.
Ooh, going straight Kindle so you can read it on the go.
Yep.
Nice. All right, very cool. Well, Jay, really do appreciate you joining us here on Reinvention Radio. You're up to some amazing things. It's an honor and a privilege to have you on. For those who have been rating and reviewing and subscribing to the podcast, really do appreciate you guys. And remember, you can join us live every Thursday from 12 until 2 Pacific here on Reinvention Radio. For Mary Goulet and Rich Otey, I'm Steve Olscher. We'll talk to you guys next time.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olscher, visit reinventionradio.com.